He was hungry. The first thing he had done when the spooks had pushed him into the room, after they'd ripped off the tape from his ankles and wrists and mouth and left him alone, was to walk around the room and inspect it carefully. He tapped the walls. They sounded dully metallic. There was a small ventilation grid at the top of the room. The door was soundly locked. He was bleeding above the left eyebrow in a slow ooze. His head ached. The floor was uncarpeted. He tapped it. It was made of the same metal as the walls. He took the top off the bucket, pissed in it, and covered it once more. According to his watch, only 4 hours had passed since the raid on the restaurant. His wallet was gone, but they had left him his coins. He sat on the chair at the card table. The table was covered with a cigarette-burned green baize. Shadow practiced appearing to push coins through the table. Then he took 2 quarters and made up a pointless coin trick. He concealed a quarter in his right palm and openly displayed the other quarter in his left hand, between finger and thumb. Then he appeared to take the quarter from his left hand while actually letting it drop back into his left hand. He opened his right hand to display the quarter that had been there all along. The thing about coin manipulation was that it took all Shadow's head to do it, or rather, he could not do it if he was angry or upset, so the action of practicing an illusion, even one with no possible use on its own, consider he had expended an enormous amount of effort and skill to make it appear that he had moved a quarter from one hand to the other, something that it takes no skill whatever to do for real, calmed him, cleared his mind of turmoil and fear. He began a trick even more pointless, a one-handed half-dollar-to-penny transformation, but with his 2 quarters. Each of the coins was alternately concealed and revealed as the trick progressed. He began with 1 quarter visible, held between the tips of his forefingers, the other hidden horizontally in the fork of his thumb, a Downs palm. He raised his hand to his mouth and blew on the coin while slipping the visible quarter onto the tip of his 3rd finger and pushing it into a classic palm as the first 2 fingers took the hidden quarter out of the Downs palm and presented it. The effect was that he displayed a quarter in his hand, raised it to his mouth, blew on it, and lowered it again, displaying the same quarter all the while. He did it over and over and over again. He wondered if they were going to kill him, and his hand trembled, just a little, and one of the quarters dropped from his fingertip onto the stained green baize of the card table. And then, because he just couldn't do it anymore, he put the coins away and took out the Liberty Head dollar that Zorya Polunichnaya had given him, and held on to it tightly, and waited. At 3 in the morning, by his watch, the spooks returned to interrogate him. 2 men in dark suits, with dark hair and shiny black shoes. Spooks. One was square-jawed, wide-shouldered, great hair, looked like he had played football in high school, badly bitten fingernails. The other had a receding hairline, silver-rimmed round glasses, manicured nails. While they looked nothing alike, Shadow found himself suspecting that, on some level, possibly cellular, the 2 men were identical. They stood on each side of the card table, looking down at him.
"How long have you been working for Cargo, sir?"
asked one.
"I don't know what that is."
"He calls himself Wednesday. Grim. Allfather. Old guy. You've been seen with him, sir."
"I've been working for him for 3 days.
"Don't lie to us, sir,"
said the spook with the glasses.
"Okay, I won't. But it's still 3 days.
The clean-jawed spook reached down and twisted Shadow's ear between finger and thumb. He squeezed as he twisted. The pain was intense.
"We told you not to lie to us, sir,"
he said mildly. Then he let go. Each of the spooks had a gun bulge under his jacket. Shadow did not hit the man back. He pretended he was back in prison.
"Do your own time,"
thought Shadow.
"Don't tell them anything they don't know already. Don't ask questions."
"These are dangerous people you're palling around with, sir. You will be doing your country a service by turning state's evidence."
He smiled sympathetically.
"I'm the good cop,"
said the smile.
"I see,"
said Shadow.
"And if you don't want to help us, sir,"
said the clean-jawed spook,
"you can see what we're like when we're not happy."
He hit Shadow in the stomach again with his fist. It wasn't torture, Shadow thought, just punctuation.
"I'm the bad cop,"
He retched in pain.
I would like to make you happy.
All we ask is your cooperation, sir.
Can I ask?
Gasped Shadow.
Don't ask questions.
He thought, but it was too late. The words were already spoken.
Can I ask who I'll be cooperating with?
You want us to tell you our names? You have to be out of your mind.
No, he's got a point. It may make it easier for him to relate to us.
He looked at Shadow and smiled like a man advertising toothpaste.
Hi, I'm Mr. Stone, sir. My colleague is Mr. Wood.
Actually, I meant, what agency are you with? CIA? FBI?
Stone shook his head.
Gee, it's not as easy as that anymore, sir. Things just aren't that simple.
The private sector,
said Wood.
The public sector, you know. There's a lot of interplay these days.
But I can assure you,
said Stone with another smiley smile,
we are the good guys. Are you hungry, sir?
He reached into a pocket of his jacket, pulled out a Snickers bar.
Here, a gift.
Thanks.
He unwrapped the Snickers bar and ate it.
I guess you'd like something to drink with that. Coffee? Beer?
Water, please.
Stone walked to the door, knocked on it. He said something to the guard on the other side of the door, who nodded and returned a minute later with a polystyrene cup filled with cold water.
CIA,
said Wood. He shook his head ruefully.
Those bozos. Hey, Stone, I heard a new CIA joke. Okay, how can we be sure the CIA wasn't involved in the Kennedy assassination?
I don't know. How can we be sure?
He's dead, isn't he?
They both laughed.
Feeling better now, sir?
I guess.
So why don't you tell us what happened this evening, sir?
We did some tourist stuff. Went to the house on the rock, went out for some food. You know the rest.
Stone sighed heavily. Wood shook his head as if disappointed and kicked Shadow in the kneecap. The pain was excruciating. Then Wood pushed a fist slowly into Shadow's back, just above the right kidney, and he twisted his fist, and the pain was worse for Shadow than the pain in his knee.
I'm bigger than either of them,
he thought.
I can take them.
But they were armed, and even if he somehow killed or subdued them both, he'd still be locked in the cell with them. But he'd have a gun. He'd have two guns.
No.
Wood was keeping his hands away from Shadow's face. No marks, nothing permanent, just fists and feet on his torso and knees. It hurt, and Shadow clutched the Liberty Dollar tight in the palm of his hand and waited for it to be over. And after far too long a time, the beating ended.
We'll see you in a couple of hours, sir. You know, Woody really hated to have to do that. We're reasonable men. Like I said, we are the good guys. You're on the wrong side. Meantime, why don't you try to get a little sleep?
You better start taking us seriously.
Woody's got a point there, sir. Think about it.
The door slammed closed behind them. Shadow wondered if they would turn out the light, but they didn't, and it blazed into the room like a cold eye. Shadow crawled across the floor to the yellow foam rubber pad and climbed onto it, pulling the thin blanket over himself, and he closed his eyes, and he held on to nothing, and he held on to dreams. Time passed. He was 15 again, and his mother was dying, and she was trying to tell him something very important, and he couldn't understand her. He moved in his sleep, and a shaft of pain moved him from half-sleep to half-waking, and he winced. Shadow shivered under the thin blanket. His right arm covered his eyes, blocking out the light of the bulb. He wondered whether Wednesday and the others were still at liberty, if they were even still alive. He hoped that they were. The silver dollar remained cold in his left hand. He could feel it there, as it had been during the beating. He wondered idly why it did not warm to his body temperature. Half asleep now and half delirious, the coin, and the idea of liberty and the moon, and Zorya Polonichnaya somehow became intertwined in one woven beam of silver light that shone from the depths to the heavens, and he rode the silver beam up and away from the heartache and the fear, away from the pain, and, blessedly, back into dreams. From far away, he could hear some kind of noise, but it was too late to think about it. He belonged to sleep now.